This is Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation with Rachel Swarns, who's been working with the New York Times since 1995 and ran their Johannesburg bureau. She lives in D.C. now and has written this book that people are talking about all over called American Tapestry, the story of the black, white, and multiracial ancestors of Michelle Obama. And Rachel Swarns, welcome. Good to have you on the air with us. So this is I have first to ask you is the sojourn you took to even get into this book, because it's not, I mean, I understand why your passion would be into wanting to understand this, but it's not what you've normally covered.
That's right. Actually, this came about because I was covering the First Lady and the First Family during the Obama's first year in the White House. And it was quite different from what I've normally done. I've worked overseas. I've written about policy, immigration, housing, poverty. But there was a sense with this 2008 election that it made sense to have someone actually dedicated to writing about the first family, this first African-American family living in this White House built by slave labor. There's a sense that generations to come, people would be writing about them, and we wanted to document that time, that experience. And this book emerged out of that time.
And other people have looked at her genealogy some, but this is different. I mean, one of the things that struck me about this book is, and it maybe comes out of who you are as well, is not just a journalist and a writer and a thinker, but as a black woman in the conjecture, that's the wrong word. In what you put into this book in terms of what you think people may have been going through. You know what I'm saying?
The challenges that you face, what I did was, the book really is a look at the sweep of American history through this family, this first family, and Michelle Obama's ancestors. And what I did really was trace them back pretty much from her grandparents back as far as I could, mostly to the 1800s. Within a little bit to the 1700s. And when you're dealing with a family, a rich tapestry like this, she had Irish-American ancestors, some of whom fought the Civil War. She had mixed-race ancestors who lived free before the end of slavery, slaves who toiled on plantations. This is a long time ago. And so what I had to do to make this period come to life is to bring the history to life and use the voices of people who lived at the time to make it really come alive, because there really aren't people to talk about it. And the documents, particularly for African Americans at the time, are hard to come by.
And they are hard to come by. I mean, and you can feel how hard they come by just by how you described what you think may have happened, also the difficulty to find certain not divorce records, but birth records and death certificates and the rest that weren't kept for black folks the way they were for white folks, and that made it really difficult.
That's a challenge, because for African Americans at that time, those who were enslaved, they don't appear in the census, for instance, by name. People would say, oh, well, what about letters and diaries, journals? Slaves were barred from learning to read or write. And the newspapers at the time didn't chronicle their lives the way that they did chronicle African Americans. So it was much easier for me to track Mrs. Obama's white ancestors during that time than it was her black ancestors, actually.
No doubt. So some of the people in this book that really jump out, and there's two people as I was fumbling for words this morning thinking about this, I began to call them the modern matriarchs of the untold history of we as Americans. And I was thinking of the two people you can describe to us now, Jewel Barclay and Joan Tribble.
I was very interested in trying to solve some of the mystery in the First Lady's family tree. Mrs. Obama had long suspected that she had white ancestors, but she had no idea who they were. And to help solve that mystery, I found some descendants of important people in her family tree. So the Jewel Barclay, an older woman who lives in Cleveland, is the descendant of the First Lady's great, great, great grandmother, who was enslaved in South Carolina and Georgia. And Joe Tribble, a white woman who lived in the Atlanta suburbs, is a descendant of the family that owned the mountain. And they helped me with DNA testing and with their memories and their records to solve that mystery.
But I think part of the mystery here, at least I would assume, the mystery for you in exploring the First Lady's ancestors in America and who they were, who she is descended from, was the mystery unfolding through the eyes of these two older women.
That's exactly right. What I realized as I was digging through history and tracing the First Lady's family back is that this history really did reverberate still in the lives of many contemporary people and many members of her family who are wrestling and grappling with things that they did not even know. And so what I tried to do was tell the story of these people who lived generations ago, but also to interweave the stories of the modern-day people who, like many of us, are wrestling with some of the difficult things in our family past.
Now, one of the other heroines of this book, and I want to come back to Jewel and Joan, especially as they discovered their relationship to Michelle Obama and to the past, one who's descended from the people who owned her ancestors and one descended from who's a cousin of
That's
Michelle
right.
Obama's now, Jewel Barclay. That part of it is centered around, you focused a great deal on Melvinia and her son Dolphus, but we'll start with Melvinia. I love the way, some people may criticize it, but I love the way that you kind of thought about who she might have been, what might happen to her, what might have happened to her, what she was like, and whether she was, you know, what she may have really looked like and who she really was. And that, because you really were probing, trying to find out who this young woman, later became older woman, became and who she was, to talk about Melvinia.
Melvinia was the First Lady's great, great, great grandmother. She was a slave girl, and she was the mother of Dolphus Shields, who was the First Lady's great, great grandfather. Dolphus was biracial. And the question that kind of winds through the book is, who was his father? His father was a white man's identity. We don't know until the end of the book. But the story of Melvinia and Dolphus is really the story of so many Americans. And I was actually lucky enough to find people, which is astonishing, to find two people, in fact, who knew Melvinia. And that is remarkable when you consider that Melvinia was born in 1844. but she lived until 1938. And so I was lucky enough to find people who knew her as a teenager and could share a little bit about her life.
And Dolphus, I mean, he's a crucial character. I think one of the lines I really enjoyed in the book was when Michelle Obama, commenting on discovering who some of her ancestors may have been, kind of realized, I think I have this right, realized that she could even have met or have known or come close to knowing Dolphus.
That's right. He really carried the family into the working class. He was born into slavery in Georgia. The son of a slave, Melvinia, and a white father, and he became a carpenter. He owned his own property. He became a well-known businessman, and when he died, his obituary appeared on the front page of the New York Times. That's where I work, no. His obituary appeared on the front page of the Black newspaper in Birmingham. He was a really well-known and well-regarded figure, and he really did carry that family from the fields of Georgia to the working class.
So, I'm sorry, were you in the middle of something?
No.
Okay. So, one of those also, the kind of the complexities of these connections have to do with the white-black relationships, whether it's the speculation about Melvinia and the man who owned her, or Dolphus and Mac, who were half brothers, or the relationship between Fraser Robinson, or Jim Robinson, and William Nesmith. And talk a bit about that, because it also had to do with places when certain parts of her ancestors couldn't have any relationships with white folks, like the son Fraser Robinson Sr., who may have lived around white people but couldn't have had those relationships in Chicago. Then you have these complex things that you play with between people like William Nesmith, you can describe, and Jim Robinson, you can describe, and Dolphus and Mac.
That's right. You know, I think many of us think about, you know, us living in a time of, you know, unprecedented multiracialism, and with so much immigration and such rates of intermarriage. But really, these connections were forged in Mrs. Obama's family, you know, more than 100 years ago. And now these were complicated and difficult relationships, though. So with Melvinia, the man who fathered her child, he came from her owner's family. And that has been a painful question for both the black and white cousins of the First Lady. Was her great-great-great-grandmother raped or not? Or was there a relationship there? And then Melvinia's son, who moved off to Birmingham, happened to be living in the same town as his half-white brother and had a friend who regularly came to his house, who he described to people as his brother, though swore people to secrecy about it. And whether that really was his brother or not, I don't know. But it speaks to kind of the difficulty of these relationships at that time. In the 1800s in Georgia, marriage between blacks and whites was forbidden, and rape on plantations was very common. And at the same time, though, after the Civil War, you know, it took time for integration. It took time for segregation to take hold. So you have families living in Birmingham, Georgia, in the early 1900s, late 1800s, who lived on integrated blocks, for instance, which is, when you think of Birmingham before the Civil Rights Movement, it's not something that you would envision. So it's a very complicated history.
I wondered as I was reading the book, I know that Michelle Obama was very taken by the article you wrote leading to the book. Became part, as you've written, of their early Thanksgiving conversation at the White House and their first Thanksgiving there. But I wonder if they've been in touch with you since, if you've heard them comment on the book you've written.
You know, unfortunately for me and for other people who are working on books about the First Lady, she has a policy of not giving any book interviews, which is a very, very sad thing for us. I was lucky to have the help of members of her family, an aunt, an uncle, a great-aunt, great-uncle, and some of her cousins who told the stories and shared the documents and photos that they had. And I briefed her staff, the First Lady's staff, as I went along and gave them copies of the book and copies to the First Lady ahead of publication. But what she thinks about it, I don't know. I hope she finds it fascinating.
And it's funny, when I was reading, I thought the first thing you might have gotten after she finished reading the book was a phone call just to talk to you about what you found, even if it was off the record. I mean, not for publication, it's because it was just so, because she seems like a woman who's so intensely interested in finding out more about where she came from.
You know, I think she is very, very interested in her family history, and her relatives are also very interested in. And who knows, you know, I may hear from her someday. Hillary Clinton actually mentioned my research in a news conference that she gave the week that the book was published. And she was talking about human trafficking and referred to an article about the book that I wrote for the New York Times. When she said, you know, look at Michelle Obama's ancestry and what we've learned about it. It shows how far we as a nation have come, and also gives us a sense of the obligations that we have as a nation to fight modern-day slavery. So it was good to hear the Secretary of State talk about it a little bit, and the former First Lady herself.
I'm sure it was. One of the things that comes out of this book as well is something that most people who, which I think, do not come from not just the black world, but the African-American world, the world that is descended from the slaves who helped build this country, is the reluctance on parts of the older generation to remember slavery, to talk about it, to pass those things on, which has led to this sojourn that you and others are on to unearth that.
That's right. There was a great deal of silence, both about slavery and about just hardship, discrimination. I think, you know, Mrs. Obama's aunt and uncle talked about this, about their own efforts over time to talk to their elders about what they had heard from their grandparents or great-grandparents about slavery, about the Depression, about discrimination, and they simply didn't talk about it. And it wasn't only the case in the black part of the family. In the white part of the family, there was similar reluctance. Some of these descendants of the family that owned Mrs. Obama's family, who turned out to be her distant cousins, had no idea that their family owned slaves, that their ancestors were slaveholders. And it was just something that people didn't speak of. It's hard history for a lot of people.
But I think the way you are writing about this, and a friend of mine who just wrote another book about his family in Virginia, who was on the show recently, Lawrence Jackson, is a professor at Emory. My father is what it was called, looking for his ancestors in Virginia, as this book has done, are not just looking for ancestors, but they are unearthing history.
And it really is true. And I think when you look at Michelle Obama's family and the sweep of the experiences that they lived through, you really are looking at the history of this country. You have people who lived through the Civil War. They had front row seats to some of the most important moments in our history. And people who were free, black people who were free before the Civil War, people who were enslaved, white people who struggled, not wealthy slave owners who had the vast plantation, the vast manor, the descendants of Irish immigrants who struggled to make their way, inherited their slaves and worked alongside their slaves. It gives you a sense of the broad range of experience of this American experience.
And you were able to find, well, I'm going to come back to that next. I want to get to a couple of the characters in here before we conclude, but there was some interesting little pieces of information there that I think that were fascinating. When you talk about that part in your book, when you were talking about the free, the freedmen who were part of Michelle Obama's ancestry. You talk a bit about that, about her and the others. And also you wrote in there about how the huge percentage of black leaders that came out of the Reconstruction in the South were freemen.
Yeah, that's right. You know, her great-great-great-grandmother who lived in Virginia near the North Carolina border, she was free, you know, in the early 1800s, and there was a community of African Americans who were free, and many of the early political leaders emerged from that. And you know, one thing I shouldn't forget to talk about in a conversation with listeners from Baltimore is that the First Lady also had ancestral ties to Baltimore, which people don't know much about. She had ancestors who moved from North Carolina in the early 1900s and settled in Baltimore in around 1907 and lived there for about a decade, just as formal segregation was really taking hold in the city.
It's interesting because in an earlier book about President Barack Obama's Irish roots, that book pointed out that President Obama's Irish ancestors lived in Baltimore.
Is that right? Now, that I did not know. So on both sides of the family, then, the Sasha and Malia have Baltimore ties somewhere.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and they moved west and became these pioneers. So it was like this. So that from your book, The other side, yes, they do.
Yeah, well, they moved west too. We don't know where they left Baltimore sometime around sometime between 1912 and 1918, and they ended up in Chicago. I'm not sure. Some people went via West Virginia, and I'm not sure if they did that, but they ended up in Chicago around 1918.
So, there were a lot of characters in this book.
Many.
I mean, that must have grabbed you. One was, and you're going to help me here, I do apologize, I'm a block on his name, the stepfather.
Oh, yes, Mr. Souter.
Yes, Mr. Harry Souter. Mr. Souter.
Yeah.
What a character. And
What a character. One of the things I've longed to do is find some of his descendants, because he has such a great story. Jerry Souter was the stepfather of the First Lady's great-grandmother, and he was just a remarkable man who ran away from slavery, fought in the Civil War, became a property owner, and was just this larger-than-life figure. One of the great stories was, and shows you kind of some of the challenges of this research. The First Lady's great uncle said to me, "Oh, Jerry Souter, of course we remember him, the stories about him. Peg Leg Souter, that's what we called him, because he lost his leg in the war." And then I went to the National Archives and pulled up his military record and his pension record, and there were the medical files, and Mr. Souter had both legs all of his life. But he was the kind of guy who inspired that kind of fanciful imagination, because he really did live such an extraordinary life.
So, and Arthur, let me go back to Dollfuss for a minute, since we just talked about Mr. Souter. That Dollfuss also is known by many people. You interviewed folks who remember Dollfuss.
That's right. And, the First Lady has good genes in her family. People lived a long time, and as a result, I was able to find living, breathing people who knew them. And, yes, I was able to find Dollfuss's great-granddaughter, as well as people in the community in Birmingham who remembered him.
So, now for you, as you kind of created this family tree and this world that brought us down to the Robinsons and the Shields, that were the parents of Michelle Robinson Obama. I wonder what some of those what were the most stunning revelations for you?
You know, there were so many. I think her family is really fascinating and really shows the breadth of the American experience. I didn't know, for instance, Michelle Obama often describes herself as a South Side girl, but I had no idea that her great-grandmother arrived in Chicago sometime around 1908, long before the migration, the Great Migration, got underway. And even more interestingly, that her great-great-grandparents arrived in southern Illinois in the 1860s. The First Lady has deep, deep, deep Illinois roots, much, much deeper than even her family knew.
And I like the kind of the conclusions you've come to in some ways, just in terms of broader conclusions about the complexities of race from the 19th century and where we are now in the 20th century, especially the earliest 20th century, and where we are now, given the families of both of these kind of heroines of the story, Jewel Barclay and Joan Tribble.
Yeah, you know, I think we are all connected in ways that we aren't often aware of. And, you know, countless Americans are making these kinds of discoveries for themselves as they do DNA testing and dig into their genealogy with Ancestry.com and other searches. One of the most interesting things that has emerged as a result of this book is that the black and white members of the First Lady's family actually got together for the first time a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta. Hmm. So you saw the descendants of the slave girl, the First Lady's great-great-great-grandmother, and the descendants of the family that owned her, all meeting and talking and eating together. And it was something to see. I think sometimes people think that this kind of history is too hard and that we should turn away. But I think we can't turn away. I think it is it is part of who we are. It has made us kind of who we are. And I think to understand America, we have to look back. And growing numbers of people are doing that.
Well, Rachel Swarms, Swarns, I really deeply appreciate you taking time with us today. Look forward to your being here in Baltimore at the Enoch Pratt Free Library. American Tapestry, the Story of Black, White, and Multiracial Ancestors of Michelle Obama. It's just an easy, lovely read and an amazing book. And thank you once again for taking the time with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Rachel Swarms. She's the author of American Tapestry, the Story of the Black, White, and Multiracial Ancestors of Michelle Obama. And you can meet Rachel Swarms tomorrow night at the Poe Room at the Enoch Pratt Free Library at 400 Cathedral Street at 6:30 in the evening. You don't want to miss it. She'll be there talking about American Tapestry, Michelle Obama, and signing her books. She'll join her tomorrow night at the Enoch Pratt Free Library at 6:30 p.m. Rachel Swarms.